Welcome back to the deep dive. If you're looking at the market right now and feeling like you're trying to read a tidal chart in the middle of a hurricane, you are definitely in the right place.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
We're seeing this total paradox. The asset class is hitting these, record-breaking institutional milestones.
Huge milestones.
And at the exact same time, the overall sentiment is just plunging into extreme fear. It's a really critical moment for anyone trying to stay informed about where the major capital is flowing.
It is. And what we've been analyzing over the last few days, it tells a story that's not just about volatility. It's really about a fundamental realignment.
Right.
We're seeing some extremely dramatic shifts, especially with key altcoins like XRP. And that's happening alongside these, you know, profound swings in Bitcoin's price and the whole market psychology.
So our mission today is to take this just enormous volume of market intelligence and pull out the most important context for you, for the listener.
Exactly. We want to show you precisely where the big money is moving and maybe some of the logic behind those decisions.
Okay, but before we dive all the way in, we absolutely have to get through the mandatory disclaimer.
The important part.
This discussion is for educational and informational purposes only. We're acting as impartial guides through some really complex data and trends. Under no circumstances should anything we discuss here be taken as financial or investment advice.
Yes, and please remember, high excitement and high fear both equal high risk. The decisions you make are entirely your own responsibility. We're just here to provide the analytical context.
All right, let's unpack this. We're going to focus first on the asset that has just been dominating the headlines with, massive whale activity and some really jaw-dropping price scenarios. We're talking about XRP.
There is a lot to get through on XRP.
An overwhelming amount of data, capital movements, official company warnings, even some extreme price modeling.
Yeah.
So let's start with the core of the XRP saga.
Let's do it.
The recent capital shifts involving XRP have, they've really captured global attention. It feels like the big deep-pocketed players are repositioning.
They are.
And we're talking about transfers so large.
Yeah.
They've apparently surprised even the dedicated XRP army. So tell us, what do these massive transfers actually look like in concrete terms?
The figures are, they're staggering. And they really demand immediate attention. Reports confirmed that a whopping $336 million worth of XRP.
$336 million.
Yes. It essentially vanished from centralized exchanges in a single day.
Wow. And this isn't a slow trickle. This is a rapid, dramatic outflow.
Exactly. Not a gradual trend. It's a floodgate opening.
Okay, so when we say it vanished from exchanges, what does that practically mean? It's not like it moved to another exchange for trading, right?
That's the critical distinction here.
Yeah.
When a volume that massive leaves centralized exchanges, or CEXs, it generally signals one of two things. Either it's moving into cold storage, meaning the holders have decided to lock their assets up for the long term off-chain.
The diamond hands.
The diamond hands. Or it represents a huge internal movement by Ripple itself for strategic purposes. Maybe treasury management, maybe setting up for an institutional partnership.
But either way, it removes that immediate selling pressure from the market.
Precisely. It takes it off the table.
So what was the immediate interpretation of this, you know, this $336 million movement?
Yeah.
What did the market think?
The consensus among a lot of analysts and crypto watchers, it quickly formed around a very bullish interpretation. The narrative was that this transfer signaled Ripple's dominance incoming. The idea is that a move this big isn't panic, it's not a collapse, it's high-level preparation.
So smart money getting ready for something big.
That's the theory, that major holders, maybe institutions, are getting into position ahead of, you know, some anticipated regulatory clarity, or a new utility adoption, or just a massive market lift. It's seen as preparation.
And while the whales are making these huge moves, Ripple itself has been issuing some pretty significant warnings to its user base. What came out after their big swell event?
Security has become this this paramount concern, and Ripple issued a very direct warning about the increasing sophistication of cyber attacks.
Okay.
They specifically warned about a surge in fake live videos and streaming events designed purely to scam XRP users.
I've seen some of those. They look pretty convincing.
They do. They often mimic official Ripple announcements, or they'll have a deep fake of an executive speaking, and they pop up during these high-profile times, like right after the Swell conference when excitement is really high.
And that raises a really important question. Why are scammers focusing these sophisticated attacks specifically on XRP holders during these big institutional moments?
It's all about psychology. It's a calculated strategy. Hmm. Scammers know that when there's a flood of legitimate news, like an ETF filing or a successful conference, people's guards are a little bit lower. They're actively looking for more information for opportunities.
So they're more susceptible.
Exactly. The high anticipation makes these high-pressure, fake giveaway scams way more effective. The target audience is already engaged. They're expecting big news. So they're vulnerable to anything that looks like the next big announcement.
That makes a lot of sense. And speaking of legitimate milestones, the CEO recently dropped a pretty big truth bomb about an XRP ETF. What was in that disclosure?
That statement really moved the whole ETF discussion from, you know, just speculation into confirmed institutional action.
Right. This is real now.
It is. The CEO confirmed publicly that a major, very established financial institution had submitted an official application for an XRP exchange-traded fund.
That is a massive development.
It's huge. It means that regulated traditional finance players aren't just watching XRP anymore. They're committing real resources, filing formal applications to integrate it. It's probably the most significant step toward mainstream acceptance we've seen.
It sets the clock ticking for that regulatory review, no matter how long it takes.
The clock is ticking, yes.
Now, beyond the financial side and the regulatory stuff, we also got some really technical context about the underlying tech, the XRP ledger itself.
Yeah, and this is where the nuance really matters, especially for institutional users who are obsessed with cost and efficiency.
Okay.
Ripple's CTO gave some clarity on how the ledger operates, and he confirmed directly that there is no tax on the XRP ledger.
Now, we need to be careful with that phrasing. What does no tax actually mean in this context?
Right. It needs careful parsing. He's talking specifically about the core function and the transaction costs on the network. They're minimal and they're predictable. He's distinguishing it from other networks that might have variable fees or complex burn mechanisms.
So when people are talking about tax-free XRP, they don't mean you don't have to pay capital gains.
No, absolutely not. Don't get any ideas.
They're talking about the intrinsic cost of just using the network.
Exactly. It's about operational efficiency. That focus on no internal network tax and high efficiency is a huge selling point for financial institutions that need to move massive amounts of value across borders quickly and predictably.
They can't have fluctuating network costs messing up their models.
They need to know the cost down to the fraction of a cent. And the architectural purity of the ledger is what makes it so attractive for that global institutional use case.
Okay, before we move on to the bigger strategic picture, we have to mention one of the most unexpected anecdotes that came up during all this. A little historical tidbit.
Yes, this was definitely a tangent someone mentioned. An XRP proponent made this surprising historical claim linking the convicted financier Jeffrey Epstein to the very early days of Bitcoin.
Right. And we need to stress this is being presented purely as an anecdote that appeared in the material, not some established verified fact.
Absolutely. But its inclusion in the conversation just shows how intensely people are digging into the entire history of this asset class. You know, the origin stories, the key personalities, the whole philosophical underpinning of crypto.
It shows the history is still being written and definitely still being debated. But let's get back to the more concrete stuff, the technical standards that are positioning XRP as, well, essential global infrastructure.
And this is maybe the most compelling long-term catalyst for XRP. We saw confirmation that Cardano's founder, Charles Hoskinson, he specifically praised both ADA and XRP for their commitment to the ISO 2022 standard.
Okay, for listeners who might not be deep into global banking standards, why is ISO 2022 so important? What does it even mean to adhere to it?
Think of ISO 2022 as the new mandatory language for global payments. It's the standard for exchanging electronic messages between financial institutions.
They come into everything from remittances to huge corporate transfers.
Everything. It provides a much richer, more standardized data format than the old systems, which means more efficiency, better compliance checks, and faster processing. And the key thing is, it's not optional. It is becoming the global mandate.
So if XRP is built to natively comply with this new global mandate, how does that change its utility and its price potential?
It completely reframes it. It moves XRP out of the purely speculative corner and puts it right into the plumbing of global finance.
Right.
If major banks have to adopt the standard, and they do, they are forced to find compatible, efficient digital assets to manage liquidity and settlement.
And XRP is already there, speaking the language.
It's natively compatible with the future of global banking, and that's what's feeding these explosive price predictions.
So analysts are seeing this mandated utility as this huge asymmetric catalyst.
Absolutely. The focus on ISO 2022 is why some are modeling a potential 6x blow-up or even more. This isn't just based on market hype. It's based on the anticipated utility-driven demand shock that could happen when major banks start using the asset for real, compliant, cross-border settlement.
Okay, let's shift gears now and talk about the quantifiable impact of these new financial products, yeah. Specifically the ETFs.
The ETF effect.
We have products launched, we have massive capital inflow recorded, and yet there's this price paradox that we really need to try and solve.
The paradox really centers around the launch of the Canary XRP ETF. Reports said the launch just broke records by pulling in a really impressive $245 million in first-day flow.
$245 million for a new altcoin product. That is an enormous amount of capital commitment.
That's a huge number.
But here's the problem. Here's a question. If it saw that much inflow on day one, why didn't the price of XRP just immediately, spike dramatically?
That's the core question. And we need to look at the mechanics of that specific ETF and the market structure. I mean, $245 million is a massive inflow, but the XRP market cap is also very significant and trading volumes are high.
So the market just absorbed it.
That's the first explanation. Immediate liquidity pressure absorption. The existing market depth might have just soaked up the initial buying required for the ETF without a huge instant price effect.
What about the structure of the ETF itself? You know, how it actually buys the XRP?
That's often the biggest factor, delayed capital deployment.
Yeah.
When investors like you put money into an ETF, the fund manager doesn't necessarily buy all the underlying assets that same second.
Right. They don't want to move the market against themselves.
Exactly. They often acquire the assets, in this case, XRP, over a few days or even weeks to minimize their market impact and get a better average price.
So the price spike could just be delayed.
It could be delayed until those funds are fully deployed. Or, more likely, until multiple, much larger filings, like the one the CEO hinted at, start to gain real regulatory momentum. The market moves on anticipation first, then the actual capital flow follows.
And we did see that, right? The reports noted that XRP did surge after the initial ETF filings were announced, with analysts asking if $3 was in reach.
Exactly. That initial surge was the market pricing in the signal of it all, the regulatory signal, the potential for future adoption. The Canary ETF launch, while a success, was just one data point. The truly monumental move will likely only happen when the massive capital pools we're about to talk about start to move.
Let's talk about that scale then. Bitwise confirmed something pretty incredible about the potential market size that XRP ETFs could tap into.
This is the figure that just fundamentally re-rates the entire asset class.
Yeah.
Bitwise suggested that successful XRP ETFs could unlock access to $100 trillion in a specific capital market.
$100 trillion.
With a T, $100 trillion. It's a staggering number.
We have to clarify that for the listener. Which specific capital market are they talking about when they throw out a number that massive?
They're talking about the global institutional market. We're talking large asset managers, sovereign wealth funds, pension funds, major corporate treasuries.
The big players.
The biggest players who currently can't directly hold or use native crypto assets because of regulations or their own compliance rules.
So the ETF is the bridge.
The ETF is the bridge. It acts as a regulated, compliant security wrapper that allows these massive $100 trillion pools of traditional capital to finally get access to the performance and the utility of the underlying asset.
And this is why that ISO 2022 standard is so important.
It all connects. The utility from the standard draws the institutional interest, and the ETF provides the compliant vehicle for the capital to flow in.
That $100 trillion figure, that's the foundation for the really extreme price modeling we need to discuss now. It sort of changes the definition of what's possible.
It does. It moves the conversation from just market cycle speculation to a utility-based valuation in traditional finance terms. And this leads us to the real aha moment here, the math. The specific scenario that models these extreme price increases based on defined institutional adoption.
Okay, break it down for us.
The modeling calculates the possible XRP price if seven different XRP ETFs collectively achieve $600 million in monthly inflows for a full year.
Okay, that's a very specific scenario. Seven ETFs, each pulling in $600 million a month. So we're projecting, what, $4.2 billion in new committed capital flowing into XRP every year?
$4.2 billion annually, mm-hmm. Just from those seven vehicles.
What are the key assumptions behind those numbers? I mean, is that realistic?
Well, the first assumption is a successful regulatory environment with the SEC approving multiple major ETFs. The second is moderate market penetration, essentially capturing just a tiny, tiny fraction of that $100 trillion institutional market we just talked about.
And $600 million a month per ETF.
It's ambitious, yes, but it's within the realm of what we saw with the initial Bitcoin ETF successes, especially if XRP's utility and cross-border payments really takes off like many expect.
So given that scenario, the $4.2 billion annual commitment, what does the modeling project for the XRP price?
This is where it gets wild. If that level of consistent institutional demand hits the available circulating supply of XRP, the resulting price run could reach extraordinary levels.
Like what?
The models laid out scenarios that projected the XRP price could potentially reach $700 or even $1,000.
$700 to $1,000.
It's crucial to understand these are not guarantees. They're mathematical projections. They're based on supply and demand economics.
You take a massive, consistent influx of new demand and you map it onto a relatively fixed, finite supply.
And the sheer scarcity created by $4.2 billion of annual buying is the engine behind those numbers.
That kind of modeling must have analysts looking for historical parallels. We saw one, Ygritte Crypto, ask, what if history repeats itself, but this time with XRP?
Right. They're looking back at the parabolic moves we saw in past crypto cycles, Bitcoin, Ethereum, others, where you had that perfect storm of adoption, regulatory clarity, and utility all converging.
And they're applying those huge percentage gains to XRP.
They are, especially given that XRP has these dual catalysts. The regulatory clarity post-lawsuit and the mandated utility from ISO 2022. The core argument is that the demand shock could be structurally greater than anything we've seen before because it's driven by bank mandates, not just retail hype.
So while we wait for all those big macro events to play out, what are the technical signals telling us right now? What's the short-term momentum looking like?
The short-term technical analysis is surprisingly strong. It indicates a really deep level of investor conviction just beneath all the current volatility.
Oh, really?
Yeah. XRP is currently flashing what analysts call a major buy signal. This is interpreted as a strong indication that an imminent price rebound is likely. It's based on indicators like the RSI hitting oversold conditions and some key moving average crossovers.
So it sounds like a perfect storm brewing. You have this technical strength meeting this huge long-term institutional potential. What does that mean for the community?
It leads to extremely high conviction. We saw one analyst quoted as saying that XRP is about to create many new millionaires.
That's a bold statement.
It is, but it really highlights the feeling among the dedicated holders that they're sitting on this time bomb of utility and institutional integration that's just about to explode into mainstream value.
So with all that anticipation, the modeling, the volatility, what's the tactical advice being given by market strategists to people who are holding XRP right now?
The instruction was very direct. It was, if you're holding XRP, do this right now.
Okay. And what is this?
The advice centered on two main things. Security and mental preparation.
Makes sense.
Security means making sure your assets are in secure, non-custodial environments, protecting them from that surge in scams we talked about earlier. And then mental preparation.
What does that entail?
Understanding that the path to $700 or $1,000 will be extremely volatile. It demands diamond hand holding through these dramatic price swings that are designed to shake out weaker hands. The message is basically prepare for the ride.
Okay, let's shift now. We've talked about the very specific, very bullish potential of XRP. Now let's look at the much broader and frankly much gloomier reality of the overall market sentiment.
Yeah, the mood swing has been absolutely dramatic from euphoria to just profound fear.
The drop in sentiment is probably the most sobering fact of the week. The crypto fear and greed index, I mean, it's just plummeted.
It has. It's hit a 9-month low, which signals this widespread psychological retreat across the entire asset class.
Let's talk specifics. Where did that index actually bottom out? And what does that number really mean for market behavior?
The index hit a staggering low of 16.
16, wow.
And to put that in context, the scale goes from zero, which is extreme fear, to 100, extreme greed. Anything below 25 is classified as extreme fear.
So 16 is deep in that territory.
It is. Hitting 16 suggests that the vast majority of retail investors and short-term traders are operating from a place of panic. This level is often interpreted by long-term analysts as hinting at market capitulation.
The moment when all the fearful sellers are finally exhausted.
The final washout, yeah.
And so what do the bullish contrarian analysts call a score of 16?
They call it the ultimate buy the dip signal.
Of course they do.
The view is that extreme fear is when market lows are made, offering the best entry points for long-term investors. And right in the middle of this fear, Bitcoin's price dipped below that key $96,000 psychological mark, just fueling the whole cycle.
And that sentiment drop was clearly reflected in Bitcoin's price volatility. Can you detail the recent action and the damage it did to leveraged traders?
The volatility has just been brutal. Bitcoin's price revisited the $94,000 support level. And more critically, that downward move printed a massive $51.27 million liquidation imbalance.
And a liquidation imbalance is just the value of leveraged positions that were forcibly closed by the exchanges.
Exactly. They were liquidated because of the rapid price drop.
And since the market was trending up before this drop, we can assume that most of those liquidated positions were leveraged longs, people betting on the price going up.
That's right. This huge imbalance confirms the move just completely caught bullish traders off guard, wiped out tens of millions in capital. So now analysts are intensely focused on what's next for BTC after tanking to 94,000.
Okay, so we have this pervasive retail fear, liquidation pain.
Yeah.
And yet, when we look at the institutional landscape, we see this really conflicting story, this dichotomy of activity.
We do. On one hand, you have the Bitcoin ETFs. They're experiencing notable outflows. This is a clear indicator that some large investors who use these vehicles are reducing their exposure, maybe taking profits, maybe responding to broader macro fear, but it signals immediate liquidity pressure.
And yet at the same time, we're seeing this deep long-term conviction from some of the most established capital pools in the world.
This is the fascinating counter-narrative. We saw reports that Harvard University,
endowment,
one of the largest and most respected institutional endowments on the planet, just tripled its exposure to BTC.
Tripled it. In the middle of this fear.
Exactly. It's a powerful signal of profound generational conviction. For an institution like Harvard, these price dips driven by short-term fear are just seen as accumulation opportunities. They operate on a decades-long time horizon. They're ignoring the noise of the fear and greed index.
This outflow and inflow contrast is also happening while the SEC is considering broader altcoin ETF approvals. How might these flows connect to that?
It suggests a potential rotation. While some are exiting Bitcoin ETFs, others might be getting capital ready for the next wave for Ethereum or XRP ETFs. They're anticipating where the next wave of regulatory approval and growth might be.
So it's not uniform panic. It's strategy refinement.
It's a constant chess game.
And amidst all this, we still have those steadfast voices telling investors to just focus on the long game.
People like Robert Kiyosaki remain aggressively bullish. He offered direct counter advice to the fear, strongly warning investors, don't wait for the Bitcoin crash to end.
His logic being that you can't time the bottom perfectly.
Exactly. It's usually a losing strategy. So instead, he advocates for dollar cost averaging. Focusing on buying during this environment of extreme fear when the index is at 16, because historically those are often the best accumulation windows.
When Bitcoin shows weakness like this, capital often rotates into other big established assets. How's Ethereum holding up?
Ethereum is showing remarkable relative strength. Compared to Bitcoin's sharp drop, ETH's relative stability is emerging as a clear rotation point. ETH is nearing that key $3,100 support level, and its price action suggests it's becoming oversold. This positions Ethereum for a strong, rapid bounce if the broader market stabilizes. It shows that smart capital sees ETH as having its own fundamental utility.
And really quickly, what are the signals for a couple other major altcoins we should be tracking?
We saw some interesting analysis on HBIR. It suggested that its recent downward price move should maybe be seen as a bear trap.
A bear trap.
A false signal of a downturn designed to lure in short sellers before a rapid reversal. So resistance might be weaker than it looks. On the other hand, Eshib's layer 2 solution, Shibarium, it reported a concerning drop. Daily transactions fell by a dramatic 54% overnight.
54%.
Yeah. And that sudden downturn raises some renewed concerns about sustained organic activity and developer adoption on that network.
Okay, let's move to our final section, which brings together three huge themes: global finance strategy, tokenization, and criminal enforcement. We have to start with Tether. a giant in stablecoins, making this extraordinary leap beyond its core business.
Tether's strategy is rapidly changing. They're not just a stablecoin issuer anymore. They're becoming a global venture capital powerhouse.
And the latest news?
Reports indicate they are in advanced talks for a massive 1 billion euro robotics investment. And critically, they're using USDT liquidity to fuel the deal.
That's fascinating. So it's not just an investment. It's a demonstration of how crypto liquidity can be used.
This is part of their much larger, you know, $2.5 billion commitment to areas like robotics and commodity lending. The key is the velocity and scale of stablecoin reserves. Unlike a traditional bank, which has lengthy settlement processes, USDT is highly liquid, easily transferable capital. Tether can use its vast reserves to commit and deploy capital almost instantly. It proves the utility of these liquidity pools as a rapid funding mechanism for heavy industrial sectors.
So deep utility is a funding tool, not just speculation. Meanwhile, the biggest player in traditional finance, BlackRock, continues its aggressive push into tokenization.
BlackRock's BUIDL tokenized treasury fund is a landmark product, and its expansion is hugely significant. They've now expanded BUIDL, their $2.5 billion fund, to the BNB chain.
And why is the move to the BNB chain specifically so important?
Well, previously, these institutional-grade products were often stuck on permission chains or exclusive networks. The BNB chain offers much greater accessibility and lower costs.
So they're signaling that these high-value regulated assets can thrive on more accessible public blockchain.
Exactly. It's all about efficiency, compliance, and access.
And the integration of this tokenized asset into the core crypto trading infrastructure is happening at the same time.
Yes, and this is the final essential step. Binance has announced it's now accepting BlackRock's BUIDL as collateral for crypto trading, specifically for institutional traders.
Okay, think about what that enables.
It means an institutional trader can now hold a regulated, highly secure traditional asset, a tokenized U.S. Treasury, and use that directly as collateral to trade crypto derivatives on a major exchange.
That massively increases capital efficiency for them.
Precisely. It bridges the two worlds seamlessly. Institutional players need familiar, compliant assets to manage their risk. By accepting BUIDL, Binance is providing this incredibly efficient vehicle that just makes institutional participation so much more appealing and operationally feasible.
Now let's touch on the ongoing ideological clash around privacy. Zcash's resilience has sparked renewed debate.
This is the perennial debate, isn't it? Privacy versus transparency. Zcash uses zero-knowledge proofs for fully private transactions, and it's seen its price extend a strong breakout. That often correlates with a heightened demand for privacy tools during uncertain times.
And how does that price action relate to the debate with the Bitcoin maxes?
Well, the price strength just reignites the whole ideological clash. Bitcoin maxes, they prioritize the open, transparent, public ledger. They see it as a cornerstone of accountability.
Whereas Zcash proponents argue financial privacy is a fundamental right.
Exactly. Especially as entities track and scrutinize transactions more and more. Volatile markets just intensify this search for guarantees, whether that guarantee is absolute transparency or absolute privacy.
Finally, we have to talk about the critical reality of global law enforcement. Mm-hmm. I mean, the long-term security of this entire asset class depends on successfully combating crime.
Security is non-negotiable for mainstream adoption. And we saw a major success with the FBI's Operation Endgame.
What did they do?
They successfully disrupted a significant, sophisticated malware network that was specifically targeting crypto wallets, trying to siphon off funds by compromising users' private keys.
That kind of coordinated action is vital. And we also saw international cooperation tackling fraud rings.
Absolutely. The threat is global. Police in India recently busted an international cybercrime gang that was running a complex Microsoft support scam, siphoning bitcoins from victims in the U.S.
These are the complex cross-border crimes that are so hard to stop.
They are. And we also saw Thai police conduct raids, arresting 15 foreigners involved in alleged crypto scam rings. These actions are essential to building the trust that's required for the next wave of adoption.
On a positive security note, we also saw a proactive move from a major exchange CEO.
Yes, the CEO of OKX demonstrated a real commitment to security by offering a significant reward, 10 Bitcoin for information, leading to the apprehension of individuals tied to specific breaches.
That's a huge bounty.
It is. And it shows that major exchanges aren't just reacting to crime. They're proactively deploying substantial capital to uphold security and deter future attacks. They're putting a very high financial value on integrity.
Wow. We have covered an incredible amount of ground today. I mean, we've seen this extreme contradiction in the market.
There's a huge contrast.
We have quantified record-breaking inflows into new financial products, the Canary XRP ETF, BlackRock's BODL, Tether's Investrio Leap. All of that is happening while the Fear and Greed Index is plunging to a 9-month low of 16.
The market is simultaneously terrified and rapidly professionalizing.
That's the perfect way to put it.
And the core takeaway for me is the shift toward these mathematically grounded institutional metrics. The potential scale of XRP's growth, you know, the $700 to $1,000 scenarios, it's not based on arbitrary hype anymore.
Right.
It is now explicitly modeled against specific massive projected ETF inflows and institutional utility from standards like ISO 2022. It shows that traditional finance is using hard, quantifiable metrics to gauge this asset's future. And all the while, the fight against cybercrime is escalating globally right alongside it.
It is a moment of profound, almost dizzying contrast.
It really is. Technology is accelerating, finance is integrating, regulation is playing catch up, and criminals are trying to exploit every vulnerability. And for you, the listener, maybe consider this final provocative thought that really encapsulates the whole challenge right now. What factor is truly more significant for the future stability and success of this entire asset class? Is it the ability of financial giants like BlackRock to successfully tokenize real-world assets and seamlessly integrate them as collateral into the trading ecosystem? Or is it the ability of global law enforcement, the FBI, the police in India and Thailand, to effectively coordinate and shut down complex international cybercrime rings?
Both are absolutely necessary for true, sustainable mainstream adoption.
They are. But which one signals the deeper, more fundamental maturity of the asset class?
A question for you to mull over as you digest this deep dive into the latest market intelligence. Thank you for taking this journey with us.